Hello, homemakers, and welcome to the Art of Home podcast, where we are exploring how homemakers cultivate a place to belong. I'm your host, Allison Weeks. I am a wife, I am a mom to four grown kids, granny to one baby boy, and I've been practicing the art of home for over 30 years. Well, if you are a regular listener to the podcast, welcome back. And if you're new here, welcome. I am really glad that you found us. This is the final episode of season 14 of The Art of Home, and I have a very exciting announcement to make. I'm not going to make you wait. I will get right to it. From the beginning of this podcast, I have interviewed women in or connected to my local network, and I am thrilled to now open the podcast up to all of you as potential guests. That's right. Starting this Friday, July 28th, 2023, you can apply to be a guest on the Art of Home podcast. I am so excited to be able to feature our listeners in homemaker portraits moving forward. So whether you are a seasoned homemaker, in the trenches, newbie, or even a single homemaker, I cannot wait to hear your story of home and to share it with our audience. I will be sending out an email with all of the details about how to apply this Friday morning, so be sure that you are subscribed to our mailing list. You can click the link in the episode description box below, or go to theartofhomepodcast.com/subscribe. Today on the show, you will hear the rest of my conversation with Mandy Thompson on food preservation and canning. So last week in part one, we talked a lot about the why of preserving food, and we focused our discussion mainly on how to manage our short-term food storage well, including refrigerator, pantry, and freezer storage. Today, we are going to cover the basics of preserving food for long-term shelf-stable storage by canning. We talk about the science and safety of canning, including why we should always follow the most up-to-date best practices. We share our favorite canning tools. We walk you through canning prep and pre-game and the basic process of both water bath and pressure canning. Our goal in this conversation is to lift the veil on the mystery of canning, dispel any fears you may have, and help you gain confidence to integrate this practice into your homemaking. Before we proceed, here's my disclaimer one more time. The information you hear on today's podcast is for entertainment purposes only, and we leave it up to you to do your own research and to be responsible for your own safe canning practices. I will be back at the end of this episode for a few final reminders. Whatever you are applying your hands to as you listen today, I know you will enjoy this deep dive into food preservation through canning in the home. So we should probably move on and talk a little bit about canning. So we wanted to touch on those other things because those are important. You have options. You don't just have to do the canning. Why do you think, though, that canning intimidates people?
Because nobody wants to blow their house up. I think it can be overwhelming just because I think we have the mindset of we have to do it in bulk because that's what we've seen so many people do in the past. And so we think it has to be this big, huge, labor-intensive process. And then, you know, the pressure canner itself is, you know, quite intimidating, just learning how to do that. I do think the Instant Pot has maybe helped a little bit with some stuff, even though that's kind of a...
Well, it's probably made people a little less scared of the concept of pressure cooking in general because you cannot can in an Instant Pot.
No.
You have to use a pressure canner. They're not the same thing.
No.
An Instant Pot is a pressure cooker. But I think you're right. A lot of people are now not quite as scared.
Yes.
Because they know how to use an Instant Pot and that's kind of the same concept.
Yes. So I think that that's, you know, helps some, but still learning the process of the pressure canner, learning that you can control it maybe a little bit more than you initially thought. It doesn't have to be super scary. I think maybe go into anything with a little bit of a healthy fear, but not, it doesn't have to be frightening.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So were you intimidated when you started canning?
So this is my advice. Start with a water bath. I think learning how to do a water bath first, you know, with the fig jam and all that kind of stuff, learning how to do the water bath in general, you're not having the thought of blowing something up, or the pressure pot, you know, blowing through your,
through your roof.
but learning how to do that first, and it's the longevity of the time, not just the pressure and things like that. So I think start small. Yes, I was intimidated. But I think my will to learn how to do it was a little bit higher than my fear of it. So, but the first time I ever pressure canned, I did watch that thing like a hawk. because did I you, was
like with a helmet and goggles.
I mean, it crossed my mind.
That's what I would do. I have not pressure canned before. So I'm hoping to like overcome that hurdle. Maybe after this conversation.
Yes. Well, and I think, you know, through the glories of YouTube and things like that, there's so many people that can at least show you the process of it. You know, you're not going to want to stay there forever and watch the whole, you know, hour-long process at times. But I think having somebody kind of walk you through, you know, this is what you're going to do. It's kind of like having your friend there. So that's a little comforting. But then just learning how to take those steps and
and I will say, if you know someone who knows how to do this, like, don't be shy. Ask them to show you. You know, if you your grandma's been canning her whole life, and you know, ask them to show you how. Because it is a whole lot easier to have someone kind of looking over your shoulder and saying, "Okay, do it this way. Don't do it that way." Or here's a tip to try to do this. But we're hoping to sort of be that person a little bit for you today. So let's talk about what's the basic process of like what's happening when we can something. And I'm going to give you, I told Mandy, this is like the idiot's version of thermodynamics because that's about all I understand.
It's just elementary.
Yes. So there's microorganisms all around us in the air we breathe, on the food we eat, in the soil. It's everywhere, right? Bacteria, yeast, enzymes, all kinds of stuff. And those microorganisms and enzymes will break down food and cause it to spoil unless we preserve it in some way by freezing it or dehydrating it or curing it or fermenting it or canning it. So what canning does is it exposes the food to high heat to kill that bacteria and the enzymes that would cause spoilage. It pushes all the air out of your canning jar, creating an oxygen-free environment under a tight vacuum seal. This kind of seal is called a hermetic seal, and that means completely airtight. No air can get in to recontaminate the food. So this is from the Ball website, all right? So I'm quoting Ball. We'll talk about Ball in a minute. Once a product has been heat processed and cooled to room temperature, the pressure outside the jar is greater than the pressure inside the jar. The greater outside pressure pushes that lid down, and the softening sealing compound that's inside the lid, that rubbery stuff, conforms to the rim of the jar, creating a hermetic seal. This seal prevents microorganisms from entering or contaminating that food during the storage. Heat processing is not optional. Failure to adequately heat process jars can result in seal failure, food spoilage, and substantial health risks in some cases. So that's from Ball. And Ball is sort of one of the authorities on canning because they just know what they're talking about. All right. So let's talk about why we would use a water bath or why we would use a pressure canner. And it's all about the acidity in the food.
Yes.
Yep.
So most of your fruits are going to be high in acid, which is why we can just do our jellies and jams in a water bath versus having to do a pressure canner. Our soups, stews, meat, and
most vegetables
are all going to need to be pressure canned.
Right. And the reason is because, and low acid would be considered anything that has a pH of 4.6 or higher. That's a low acid food and needs to be processed in a pressure canner. So there are some, low acid foods that you can can safely in a water bath if you acidify them. Like if you make a pickle out of them or you add lemon juice or whatever. But you have to make sure you're adding enough. And the reason is for this is because the bacteria, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce this correctly. It's Clostridium botulinum. So it's basically the bacteria that will cause, that will form into botulism. It can be killed by boiling at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, which is what you're going to get with a water bath. Okay. But it is a spore producing bacteria. And the spores of this bacteria will not be killed at 212 degrees. Okay, and that is what will produce the botulism toxin in the right conditions. Well, guess what those conditions are? Low oxygen, low acid, room temperature. And that's the exact conditions inside of a canning jar of low acid food. So a pressure canner will reach temperatures by using pressure. It forces heat and pressure. It forces the water to boil at 240 degrees for a sustained amount of time. And that's what you need in order to kill the spores of the botulism bacteria. So does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. And you want to make sure that that time that's reached, you continue that time for what is needed. If your pressure drops below during canning, you need to make sure that you restart your timer because it's sustained time, not just
It's not just the pressure, the temperature. It has to be done for whatever the recipe calls for that amount of time. Okay. So I just wanted to give that basic definition of what's actually happening in the canning jar and why it's necessary to do either the water bath or the pressure canning. It's either or. That's it. You got two choices to do safe canning for shelf stable. Now, I'm not talking about freezer jam that you're going to just store in the freezer or some like a quick pickle that you're going to put right away into the refrigerator. We're talking about stuff that you want to be able to put on the shelf in the pantry, unrefrigerated for an extended amount of time. Okay. So how to get started. And the first thing I want to address is safety. So don't be scared. Don't be scared. Home canning done properly is safe. Okay. But here's the key. It has to be done properly. Don't be a hashtag rebel canner. Okay. And I know I'm going to get some hate mail probably, but I'm sorry. There is a time and a place where we can rebel against, you know, evil governments and all that kind of thing, but this is not the time and the place. You really need to practice safe canning practices. So some of the safe canning practices that we want to make sure we're doing is keeping everything squeaky clean, and we want to use proper methods and proper tools. So people will often say, well, we just practice open kettle or inversion. And that just means we put hot food into hot jars, we stick the lid on it, and then they're talking about with high acid things like jams and jellies and stuff like that. And we just stick a lid on it and we leave it on the counter and it will seal. Mm-hmm. It will probably pop a little seal, but it's not a hermetic seal. Mm-mm. And what's probably going to end up happening is you might go in your pantry storage in maybe a few weeks or maybe a few months and you'll have several unsealed jars. Mm-hmm. And then you got to throw it away because you don't know how long it sat there unsealed. There's also inversion, which is very similar to that. So that you put hot jar, you put the lid on, the seal on, and you turn it upside down to let it form its seal. Mm-hmm. And it probably will form a seal, but it's not going to be an airtight hermetic seal. Can you think of other things that we want to avoid doing with tools and methods?
I heard somebody talk about putting their jams in their dishwasher before. Again, I would maybe
put in their jams or their jars.
Their jars filled with jam
in the dishwasher.
In the dishwasher to create your seal.
That's a new one. I haven't heard.
So
that one.
I just would maybe advise against that, just because there's so many different dishwashers with so many different specs. So we just don't know. We can't control the dishwasher as well as we can a water bath or the pressure canner. So
yeah,
I think having a little bit more control over knowing what's happening would be better.
Yeah. You just don't. Yeah. And the same. And I've heard about oven canning too, where people will put filled jars with jam or whatever in the oven and use the heat of the oven to create the seal. There's two problems with that. Jars, and it says this on every jar manufacturer, it says, do not put these in the oven. Mm-hmm. They're not, intended for the dry heat of the oven. They won't be able to withstand that. They might do fine, but when you take them out, you're seriously running the risk of like a
thermal shock.
A thermal shock, and it's going to crack your jars, or they might even shatter completely. Mm-hmm. And then where will you be? You'll have to throw it all away. And that the same goes for heating them in the oven. We'll talk about that in a minute when we talk about prepping your equipment. But the other problem with oven canning, like trying to put the finished product in there and let it seal inside the oven, is that, again, you can't, oven heating is not as, it's not as easy to control. Mm-hmm. And it's not, you're not sure that the oven heat, that dry oven heat, is going to penetrate all the way through to the very inside of whatever's in that jar to make sure that it gets to the right temperature for the right amount of time. Mm-hmm. Whereas with either the boiling water or the pressure canning, you have a lot more control over that. So that's why you don't want to do that. Let's see. I think that's all. Oh, I just want to talk for a second about recycled jars. Okay, you guys. Don't use old pickle jars from the grocery store and make your thing and put and try to reuse old pickle lids and jars and all that kind of stuff, because that stuff is only made to be sealed once. And you're not, again, you're not going to get that hermetic seal. You can absolutely recycle pickle jars and jam jars and use them for short-term refrigerator storage or dry storage. I use, like, for storing chocolate chips and stuff like that. You know, I just clean out my jam jars really good if I bought it from the store, and I'll use that for all kinds of things, and really all over the house, actually. They're great for Q-tips and stuff like that. Yes. But not for canning. Yes. Okay.
Not all jars are created equal.
No. And really, canning jars are not that expensive. And they can be reused over and over and over again if you take care of them. So it's an investment, but you can reuse it. So use proper methods and use proper tools. Stick to verified recipes. Okay. Why is that important?
Because we don't want to be hashtag rebel caners. Because we want to stick with what's tried and true, especially whenever we're early, when we're in the beginning, learning how to follow a recipe verbatim really gives us the foundation of learning how to can and can safely. Mm-hmm. If we try to deviate from that, we're really not going to have the anticipated product of what we're hoping for. So follow your tried and true recipes. Not everybody on TikTok or Facebook or Pinterest are verified. So I really love the ball stuff. Even recipes from your canner are good and verified, and those are some great ones to start with and learn from. So go with trusted sources, verified sources, and learn the process of things first.
Sticking to verified recipes is just a good idea, because you know you're going to come out, you're going to put a lot of time and effort and possibly money if you invest in like a bushel of something, or, you know, a whole bunch of produce from the farmer's market or wherever. And you want to make sure it's going to come out correctly, and you're not going to have to dump it because you know, just kind of went wild west on it in the kitchen. I mean, cooking, you can just go crazy with cooking. Canning, no, you need, it's a science. It really is a science. It's, you're doing, you know, chemistry and thermodynamics in your kitchen, and you need to follow the rules. there's a good reason for that. Okay, so, oh, the other thing about following the recipe is, and you'll see this pretty much in every, like in the ball book, it'll say, don't double this recipe. You know, be careful about trying to double and triple recipes, thinking, oh, I can just double it, and because that changes things. You're better off finding a tested, verified recipe for the amount that you're trying to create rather than doubling it and tripling it. I second you saying the ball blue book is sort of the Bible. It's not very big. And it's sort of the Bible of all time of canning. And if you don't have a copy of the ball blue book, I highly recommend that you get a copy. It's visually pleasing to look at. It has a lot of, great photos and illustrations, and it's just a great resource. I've had mine for years and years and years, and it is well loved and well used. And then they have, of course, a ton of stuff on their website and all of that. National Center for Home Food Preservation is a great resource with up-to-date, safe recipes and practices. You'll pretty much find anything you would need to know on that website, and I'll link all of this below. And then if you're in the States, at least, I know we have county extension agencies, county ag offices, which will have all of this information generally for free. You just go and ask for it, and they'll give you recipes and you know, safe canning practices and all that kind of stuff. Okay, so briefly, let's touch on, since we're talking about safety, there are some things that you should not can at home. Okay? And there's good reasons why you should not can them at home. This is not because the government is trying to keep you dependent upon their food system. This is just because it's just not safe. It's just not safe. Okay, so one of those things is dairy. Pretty much any dairy product. Butter, milk, cheese, no dairy. Mm-mm. Okay. No starchy things. And that includes thickening your jams or jellies with cornstarch. Mm-hmm. That's fine if you were going to make a quick jam and put it in the fridge or serve it right away, but not if you're going to can it for long-term shelf. You have to use like pectin or something like mm-hmm. that. Pasta and rice, again, because they're dense and hard for the heat to penetrate, but also because I think it pretty much destroys the texture of pasta if mm-hmm. you try to pressure can that.
Yes.
Because you would have to pressure can it
yes.
in order for it to be safe, and it would be like really gross and mushy.
Mm-hmm.
So just can your soup without the pasta and then yes. make fresh pasta when you're going to eat the soup.
Yes.
That would be a better practice, I would think. Dense purees like pumpkin puree, you can cubed pumpkin, but not puree because it's too dense for the heat to penetrate all the way through in the pressure canner. Bread and cakes are a no-no. Oil and eggs. Is there anything else?
I think I got it.
I mean, and I think in general, the reason why those things aren't safe to can is because they're low acid. So they would have to be pressure canned and they're too dense for the heat to penetrate all the way through to be certain that the heat has gotten in there and killed every bit of, mm-hmm. you know, potentially harmful bacteria. So, okay. Just, it's simple. That's not a whole lot of rules to follow.
No.
Really. You got a bazillion other recipes that you can do. You can meat safely. You can yes. all kinds of things safely, but those are the ones that you need to stay away from. Okay, so let's talk tools. What would you say are some essential tools that you need?
So obviously a good pressure canner mm-hmm. or a good water bath.
Or both, if you're going to do both.
Or both, yes. I have a big stock pot that I like to use for my water baths. So I don't have like a specific water bath one, but some of the tools that I really, really love are the funnel, mm-hmm. The Headspace measurement tool. That has been huge because sticking a ruler in your stuff is just a little weird. obviously the bands on there help, but and they can each show you like the quarter inch, the half inch yeah. and 1 inch, but really being able to have your little tool that just sits right on the top of the jar, that's been huge. Jar lifters.
Yes.
The first couple of times I did it, I used tongs, and that's a slippery slope.
Literally.
Literally. So jar lifters, they're not very expensive. Indulge.
Yeah.
So just for basics, those are kind of my basic, mm-hmm. Favorite essentials, just for that.
Yeah. I absolutely, you know, that you can go without the funnel and you can mm-hmm. go without the jar lifter, mm-hmm. but like I said, I'm going to talk about costs when we get to the end, because I did a little research on what it would cost you today to get started if you had nothing. And I would tell you it's worth the $7, you know, yes. for the jar lifter and the $7 for the funnel. So worth it. Yes. Because it just makes the job so much easier, and that'll make more sense when we walk through the process here in a second, as mm-hmm. it's kind of like, you have to have everything ready, mm-hmm. you know, in order for this to go well. It, like mm-hmm. everything needs to be ready and prepped. And the more you have, that helps you streamline the process, because you're going to go through all this trouble of getting this food ready and cleaning everything, and everything's clean. And then you're going to just sit here and fumble and expose the food to air for unnecessary length mm-hmm. of time while, you know, you want to just get it done fast and get the lid on and get it in the water bath canner. So, okay. I would say, definitely a good canner or a stock pot with a lid. It mm-hmm. needs to have a good tight fitting lid and a rack.
Yes.
A rack is a must, because you don't want it to be touching the bottom of the pot. Pressure canner, I'm going to let you talk about that when we get to the pressure canning, as far as what to look for. Obviously you need jars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you need to have like jars that are rated for canning.
Yes.
And be careful about that where you buy your jars, because a lot of the ones that you'll find on Amazon are made in foreign countries where they're not mm-mm. putting a standard on them that says, you know, these are rated for safe for canning. They're going to withstand the temperatures and the pressure that you're going to put them through with canning. So make sure that you're getting stuff that's rated for that. Now let's talk for just a second about the lids. So you have a two-piece, a lid assembly is what it's called. Mm-hmm. It has the metal ring, and then it has a flat cap that mm-hmm. goes in the middle. And that flat cap, if you flip it over, that's what's got the rubber stuff, the sealing compound on the bottom. And it's one use only mm-hmm. for canning. You can use it again and again for storage. But you can only use it once for a seal,
yes.
for a proper seal. But they do make reusable rings.
Yes.
Is what they are, sealing rings. The one company that I know of, I think there's more than one, but Tattler. So have you used the Tattler rings?
I haven't used a Tattler.
Yep. Mm-mm. Okay. I have a bunch of them. I would say that my success with the Tattler lid, which is, so basically you use the Tattler lid. It's got a plastic lid that has a rubber gasket-like ring that fits up underneath there. Mm-hmm. And those are reusable. And you use a regular metal band with it okay. for the processing. My success rate versus using a brand new metal lid every time is, I would say with the Tattler, I get probably 80% of the time I get a seal, and then I don't. Mm. So
yeah.
You know, there's a potential of some waste there, or I just have to put it in the refrigerator and use it right away if I don't get a seal on it. They're a little bit more finicky. And the jury is still out. The National Center for Home Food is started to do a study in 2013 on Tattler lids. So we don't have that data yet to know whether or not they're going to recommend if it's safe. But I mean, they are safe to use, but whether or not they recommend that over the metal lids. Saucepan and cooking pots, obviously. Pot holders and towels. Okay, make yes. sure you've got plenty of those, because uh-huh. you're going to need them for all sorts of things. Uh-huh. Like good dish towels and maybe a few or wet washcloths handy uh-huh. nearby to be able to wipe rims and stuff like that.
Yes.
So more than you think you need, have that at the ready. And then obviously you need like wooden spoons and rubber spatulas. Generally wanting to use things, wood, rubber, that's not going to scratch your mm-hmm. jars. If you're like putting something down in the jar to get rid of bubbles,
yes.
you don't want to put anything in there that's metal, because it could potentially scratch your jar and then you've got some problems there. Food scale.
Yes.
Is really helpful to have.
Yes.
Because a lot of what you're going to get in these recipes is like, okay, you need this, you're going to get weights. And mm-hmm. if you want to be precise, it's much better to do weights as opposed to dry measuring cups.
Yes.
I would think. Mm-hmm. A timer of some sort is very helpful. And then of course, your Sharpie and your freezer tape for labeling when you're done. I'm all about it. All about it.
I love it.
Is there anything that's maybe nice to have, but you think not necessary, like a splurge or item or something like that?
No, because I think you've covered pretty much everything, mm-hmm. you know, as you're making different recipes, or maybe, you know, splurges that you may want to have with a recipe here or there, but mm-hmm. overall, just kind of your basic kitchen essentials.
Yeah. You don't need a lot. Mm-mm. I mean, you just don't need a lot to get started with this. And there is a lot on the market that, you know, mm-hmm. lots of shiny things that mm-hmm. seem like you would want to have that and fancy labels and all that kind of stuff. And you don't have to have all of that.
No.
Canning actually can be, like, the startup cost can be very, very reasonable and affordable. Mm-hmm. Okay. So basic steps. Okay. Let's talk about pregame, the importance of getting things ready before you even mm-hmm. get started.
Yes.
Okay. So if you were going to start a project, what would you do first?
Make sure I have enough time. Number one, yes. I'm notorious for starting something and then scurrying because I'm late or something else. So number one, make sure that you have enough time. Mm-hmm. Just that way, if something does happen, whether water bath or pressure can or either one, if you're not up to pressure, again, you want that longevity with your time. So time is number one. And then number two, go through and look at every single item that you're going to need for this. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get halfway through and then think, oh, where did I put the weight to the pressure canner? And then you're running around scurrying, trying to find the weight for your pressure canner. Don't do that. So get all the things that you want out, every little bit that you're going to need, and then go through your recipe. I would always read your recipe maybe once or twice before you even get started. That way you really do know what kind of time you need to allot for that.
And what kind of ingredients.
Yes. Yes.
So make sure you have all your ingredients.
Yes. And there's some things like doing the chicken broth and stuff like that. That can be a 2 or 3 day process. It doesn't all have to happen in the same day. So it may be where one day, you know, I'll let my chicken broth cook for 2 or 3 days in the crock pot and get really happy and lots of flavor and all that kind of stuff. And then I'll let it sit, kind of skim off the fat, strain everything, and then go into the process of actually canning it. Again, because I'm going to use fats for different things than canning. So if you can do a 2 day process, if you know that you're not going to have time for something, then you can do that. A lot of your jams and jellies and things, it's going to be a 1 day process. Mm-hmm. So you're going to want to make sure that you've got your time, got all your ingredients, and then you're going to start with making sure that every bit of your kitchen is clean, sterilized. And then again, get your jars hot. Start with your stuff, with your recipe of making your jam, and then getting everything ready to fill. So,
yeah, don't start this project with a messy kitchen.
No.
Like, make sure your sink is empty, your dishwasher's empty, everything's been cleaned. If you were going to, like, get your countertops ready, I would, would you just, like, wipe it down with a Clorox wipe or something and let it dry and just to make sure there's no germs?
Yes.
And everything's clean?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Cool. Yes. Start with a clean kitchen. Make sure you have everything you need. Make sure you have all your equipment. Make sure you have all your ingredients. I would say get your stuff ready. Wash, chop, prep. If you're making, like if I was making a chutney, I would have, just like if I was, you know, mise en place, if I was doing a meal, I try to have everything chopped and ready to go ahead of time before I start assembling so that it goes so much faster.
Yes.
And I would do the same thing if I was especially if I was canning.
Yes.
So measure your ingredients all out, have them in place, have them ready, have your wet cloth nearby, a couple of them, lots of towels, lots of pot holders. Decide ahead of time where you're going to put your jars to sit and cool in a place that's going to be undisturbed and out of the way. Yeah. Oh, inspect your equipment too as you're getting your equipment together. Like, check your jars, make sure there's no nicks or cracks, make sure your lids are in good shape and they're not like they don't have rust or dents. I can't tell you how many times I've got some lid assemblies like all ready to go and then I was taking one out to put it on the filled jar and I'm like, "Oh, this has rust on it." Oh my gosh. Yeah, so make sure you're checking all that kind of stuff ahead of time.
Yes. That's and for your canner, make sure that your gasket, if you're using a gasket, if you need to oil your oh goodness, I'm drawing a blank on my other canner. It's not what I have. The metal on metal, it needs oil. Just make sure that all of that is ready to go.
Yeah.
Again, that your seals are good, that your vents are clean.
Okay.
And you have your weight.
And you have your weight? Okay. I'm trusting that everybody knows what you're talking about, who has a pressure canner. But no, that's good. That's good information that I wouldn't know to bring up because I have never done that before. Okay. So that's your pregame. Cleaning, heating, and if necessary, sterilizing your jars and your lids. Okay. So let's talk about what that process looks like. How do you do that? What do you do to get your jars ready?
So I don't have a dishwasher. So I get to be the dishwasher. So a lot of times I will clean my jars, dry them really well. And then I actually, since I have to heat up the pressure canner anyway, I put the jars in there to keep them warm so it can all kind of come up to temperature together. So that way I'm using one thing instead of 15. So I usually heat that up there. I have an extra sauce pot for my lids. And then I can have whatever other jam, broth, boiling water is ready to go to the side.
Yeah, I do the same thing. I would do the same thing. I mean, okay, so you can clean and heat your jars in a dishwasher for all pressure canning and for water bath canning if you're going to process it for more than 10 minutes, which I've noticed in the old Blue Book, which this is probably from about 1992 or something, and the newer, this newer Ball book that I have, which is like the ultimate complete I don't know, home preservation book or something like that. They don't even say that anymore because all of the water baths are at least 10 minutes long. Mm-hmm. So what they're telling you now is it's okay to clean and heat your jars in the because it's a wet heat, mm-hmm. okay, in the dishwasher. If you're going to do any kind of pressure canning, because it'll be fine. But if you're going to go more than 10 minutes on your process in a water bath, you can do it that way as well. If you're not going to process for more than 10 minutes, which I don't, just go ahead and process for 10. It's not going to change the like viscosity of your jam or the end product that much more, then you can skip the sterilization step. Because if you're going to process for only 5 minutes, then you're going to have to sterilize everything, which is an extra step and more boiling water.
And it's 10 minutes.
It's only 5 more minutes.
Yeah.
If you just add 5 minutes and do a 10-minute water bath, then you're good to go and you don't have to do the sterilization. Now you do have to clean them.
Yes.
And they need to be hot.
Yes.
Because that is the cardinal rule is you always, always, always put hot food into hot jars.
Yes.
Otherwise you will thermal shock your jars if you put hot food into cold or even room temperature jars. And then you might have a shattered jar on your hands and then you have to throw that away and then you'll be sad. Mm-hmm. So don't do that. Okay. So let's see. Lid assemblies. The other, I like what you said. I do the same thing. I don't put like I just do water bath. So I'll get my giant, I have a giant one. It's like this big and it belonged to my great grandmother. So I take that thing out. It covers half the stove.
Two burners.
And I get that going with water and I put my empty jars in there to warm up while I'm getting everything ready. And then that way, when I'm ready to fill, I just take out one empty jar, dump the water back in there, and then fill it, and then put it back in. Mm-hmm. And my lid assemblies, I keep in a little saucepan of water. I just keep them warm. Do not boil your lid assemblies. The new stuff in the new ball book says you don't even have to keep them warm.
Oh.
It doesn't even say to keep them warm. It says clean them good, dry them, and just have them to the side. I think it was because people were boiling them.
Yeah.
Because what they used to advise was put them in a saucepan to the side, but don't boil them because if you boil them, you're going to compromise that compound, rubber compound, and it's not going to seal properly. And so I think that's probably why they quit recommending the hot water, whatever. Just don't even put them in hot water. Just have them off to the side because you're going to do at least 10 minutes in a water bath and that's going to kill anything and it'll be fine. So if you're not getting this yet, what we're saying is clean, be extra clean, be really clean with everything that you do.
Yes.
Okay.
Every step.
And just another note too, if I was going to like, if I'm making chutney, which has to cook on the stove for a little while, if I'm cooking something ahead of time to go into the jars and it's going to take more than 30 minutes or about 30 minutes or more to cook, I'll do that first. And while that is simmering on the stove, I'll get everything else ready.
Yes.
Like I'll, you know, start heating up the water for the canner and all that kind of stuff. So it just helps to save on energy a little bit. So I'm not running the stove unnecessarily for an hour.
Yes.
Okay. So let's talk about, we've talked about prep and pregame. We talked about pregame and heating and getting your jars ready. And now you're ready to fill your jars. So basically, there's a couple of different ways to fill jars. There's the hot pack and the raw pack. Okay, what is your knowledge about these two things? What can you tell me?
So I'm still learning with the cold pack, but it is, you don't want air bubbles. So you definitely want to make sure that any of this, you're going to get rid of your air bubbles. And then you're going to pour your boiling water on top of that and then add it to your canner. But the other, it's hot on hot and pop it in there. And again, this is where I do like having a funnel because I like, because you want to make sure that your rims are clean. So I like having a funnel that can make that process easy and quick. And I'm not getting sticky stuff.
Sticky
all over.
Juice. Right. Mm. So like if you were going to cherries, I know, cause I know that's a high acid food that you can do a water bath. If I have a bunch of cherries, which I do actually in my fridge right now, and I wanted to can them, I could get all those cherries pitted and ready to go. I could put them raw in a hot jar. And then I've made a sugar syrup over on the stove. I take my funnel, I stick it in my jar of raw cherries, and then I pour the appropriate amount of that sugar syrup over those cherries.
Yes.
And if you don't have that funnel, then you can end up with sugar syrup all over the place and all over the edge of your rim, mm-hmm. which because we want a hermetic seal, we don't want anything coming between the glass mm-hmm. rim of the jar and the rubber seal on the lid.
Yes.
So that's why it's important to not only use a funnel, but then as soon as you put it in there and take the funnel off, have that wet rag ready to go to just wipe that seal off.
And it's nice too, because you can use vinegar. A lot of recipes will suggest even using a vinegar damp cloth to wipe around just to kind of sterilize one last time.
Yeah. So. No, that's a great practice because that will also cut through that sticky mm-hmm. more than just plain water would.
Yes.
Yeah. No, that's a really good practice. Okay. So if you're, let's see, we already talked about heating the jars in the dishwasher, hot pack and raw pack. I'm not going to get too much into that. You can Google that, but essentially, you know, if you're doing a hot pack is where you cook the item before you put it in the jar. Mm-hmm. So in that case with the cherries, I might cook the cherries and then put them in the jar. Mm-hmm. Or like, what would you do that with? Well, like with the chutney, I would cook my chutney and then put it in. I'm putting something hot. The whole thing is hot. A raw pack is where you have, like, this is how I would make pickled okra. Mm-hmm. I would put all my raw okra in there and then I would make a pickling mm-hmm. solution on the stove and then pour that over.
Yes.
Okay. That's the raw pack. And there's reasons why you would do one or the other. Mm-hmm. And it depends on if you're water bath canning or if you're pressure canning. So you just want to be aware that that's two different things and pay attention to what the instructions on your recipe say.
Yes.
One thing that I used to do this and then I realized that I'm not really supposed to do this actually fairly recently. It's really not recommended that you do like assembly line filling. Like don't have like six jars laid out and then fill. You need to fill a jar, cap a jar, stick it back in the water, mm-hmm. take a new one out, fill it, cap it, stick it back in the water mm-hmm. one at a time.
Yeah. And you know, cause we're wanting to keep everything hot. We've brought everything up to temperature. We mm-hmm. don't want anything to cool down too much. So mm-hmm. if we're doing one at a time, we're typically going to work a little bit faster getting that one kind of sealed back up and then back into the heat versus yeah. pulling out your six. By the time you get to that sixth one, it's already starting to cool down.
Yeah.
And then, you know, again, you run the risk of thermal shock or anything else.
Yeah, for sure. You said earlier, you mentioned headspace.
Yes.
Okay. So you're filling your jars, but you don't want to fill them all the way. So can you explain what headspace is?
So the headspace is that little bit of room where that oxygen is going to get sucked out. Mm-hmm. And we don't want to overfill our jars because then we run the risk of them bubbling because they're going to boil in those jars. We don't want that to boil out. We want to leave enough headspace where they have room to get happy and do their thing, but then also to whenever we pull them out, that vacuum's out mm-hmm. and then we've got no more air in there. Also, we don't want to underfill where it has too much headspace and then it's not going to create the right seal, the seal. Either.
Yeah. Yeah. So. For sure. Okay. So headspace is important and your recipe will tell you,
yes.
each recipe will tell you how much headspace you need to leave. And that's why you were saying that little tool that they make is so helpful because yes. then you're not having to try to stick a wooden ruler inside your,
yes.
or next to your jar and like, is that a quarter inch? I don't know. Does that look like a quarter inch? So get the little headspace tool because it's probably just a few dollars.
Yes. It's only, and they have a whole kit that has like yeah. the funnel, the headspace,
the jar lifter,
everything. And all that. So yeah, I think it's $12 or something.
It also has that handy magnetic
yes.
wand that picks up your jar, mm-hmm. Your lid.
So that's almost a necessity.
I think it is a necessity.
Because I've burned my fingers a few times.
You're trying to reach your fingers to grab your lid out of the water. And it's, yeah, you definitely want that little thing too.
Yes.
And then, so you've got it filled with the proper headspace. And then if you need to make sure you don't have any air bubbles in there.
Yes.
So they do have a tool that usually comes in those kits. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a extra long plastic knife almost. Mm-hmm. It's like a silicone long thing that you could just run around the inside.
Yep.
You put it inside the jar and run it around the inside to release any air bubbles or pockets mm-hmm. of air that have gotten trapped between the food and the wall of the,
yes.
of the jar. I also read that you can use a non-metal chopstick.
Oh, I didn't think about a chopstick. That's a great idea.
If you don't have that little tool.
Yeah.
So just make sure it's clean.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Before you put it in there.
Sanitize
it. Yes. and then clean your rim and put your lid in your band. Okay. Tightening the band.
Yes.
Let's talk about that.
don't under-tighten and don't over-tighten. You really do learn, but you don't want to over-tighten because you want the air to be able to escape whenever it's doing everything. And you don't want to under-tighten because you don't want food to either boil out. And if you're doing a water bath, you don't want water to get in. So there is a happy tightness, hand tighten. Don't like...
They call it fingertip tight. So just to what you're... just not with your whole palm on top of the thing, tightening it so that no one can ever open it for the end until the end of time. But like just enough to where you're getting slight pressure with your fingertips using it to tighten that band. Okay. So just so you know, you do process it with the whole assembly of the lid with the metal flat part and the band screwed on, fingertip tight only.
Yes.
Okay. And then you're ready to process.
Yes.
Once you got all your jars filled and your canner is full. So for water bath, basically what you want is you either have a rack at the bottom or you've got a jar lifter that's like a rack in one. Those are, I feel like those are a really great invention and you should just have that. It's like a basket that's got little spaces for each jar to sit in. So that's a really helpful thing to have. And most water bath canners will come with one of those.
Yes.
If you don't have one and you don't have a trivet or something you can put at the bottom, you can make a rack for the bottom of your canner by taking some old lid rings, okay? Canning jar lid rings, the metal rings.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And you can link them together. So it kind of looks like a... I don't even know. It just looks kind of like a flower, like a honeycomb. Yes,
yeah.
That's exactly what it looks like, but round. And so you just link them together somehow with, I don't know, a zip tie or something. But just, again, clean it before you put it in there.
Yeah.
but that's a way that you could make one if you didn't have one. So everything is going nicely in there. It's all settled down in its position, safely. The another good use for that rack is that it keeps the jars from touching one another and clanking up against one another where they could get scratched or etched or possibly even crack while they're doing their water bath. A good practice you should have when you get ready to start your processing, you want to make sure that, and your recipe will tell you this, how much you need to have at least an inch of water over the top of the canning jars, the lids. There needs to be at least an inch of water. And then you need at least, I would say 2 inches of, you know, pot left above the water for it to boil.
Yes.
Because you don't want to have water boiling over. You want that lid to stay on nice and tight during the processing time. So make sure you got plenty of space. If you put your canning rack down in there with your fill jars and it doesn't come up to an inch above water over it, you're going to have to top it off. So this was another hack that I learned fairly recently, was to have a kettle of water boiling nearby so that you can just easily top that off and not have to add cold water and then wait for it to get going again. You should have your water already warm and simmering when you put all these jars in there. Then you crank it up and get it to a boil. And when it starts to boil, that is when you have a good rolling boil. That's when you start your processing time. Not before, but when it starts to boil. And so then you have your lid on and you start your boiling time and then you're good to go. Make sure that you're adjusted for altitude.
Yes.
Okay. Let me tell you something. I live my whole life pretty much in the flatlands of the Southeast. And I did not even consider that we live at 1,300 feet here.
Oh, yeah. That's interesting.
Yes. And I was looking at this ball thing and I'm like, the little chart says if you're over 1,000 foot elevation, you're going to have to adjust your processing times for that because it takes longer for water to boil the higher up you go in elevation. So for where we are here at about 1,300 feet, we have to add like an extra 5 minutes of processing time.
Wow.
I
was today years old when I learned that.
You're welcome. I had no idea. Okay. I had no idea. So after, and this was another new thing that I just learned, after you're done, your timer has gone off with your water bath and you're ready to take it off, turn off your heat, take the lid off, let it sit for 5 minutes in the canner. because this is really important. The standing time allows pressure inside the jar to stabilize, and it reduces the likelihood of liquid loss inside your jar. Then you lift the rack out and carefully remove the jars. You don't have to worry about drying the little water that's on top. It'll evaporate. You want to disturb those lids as little as possible until that seal sets. Just set them on a towel to cool upright at room temperature and leave plenty of room around the jars for air to circulate. Don't cram them right next to one another for 24 hours. And if your house is drafty or if where they happen to be, they're getting a draft, you can drape like a tea towel over the top of them to protect them from any drafts that might be coming into the room. And then after 24 hours, you check your seals. So you remove the bands and you check and make sure that everything's sealed. You can press down on the top of the lid and it will, you will feel that it has indented. It's concave, right? Concave? Yeah. Always get those two confused. If it's not sealed, it needs to be put in the refrigerator or reprocessed.
Yes.
And there's like methods to do that, and you can Google that and find the safest way to do that. So, and then getting them ready for long-term storage is just dry them off. You might want to, both for the purposes of if anything got dripped or sticky or anything, but also for us, we have really hard water. You can get a cloth with a little bit of vinegar, and you can wipe around the glass with that damp vinegar cloth, and it will help get rid of some of the residue from the hard water.
Yes.
Which is a really great tip. And then, of course, you're not going to skip this step. You're going to label your jars.
Yes, you are.
With what's in them and the date that you processed.
And it's really good if you label the top lid itself. That way you know this lid has already been used.
Exactly.
It cannot be used again.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Plus, that's easier to see. Like
yes.
In the pantry, you can see what's, you can read the lid a lot easier than you can read the front
yes.
of the thing. Okay, so that's for water bath. Now, some of that will be the same for pressure canning, but I'm going to hand it over to you and let you talk about sort of pressure canning best practices and all that.
So I think we're pretty much the same up until you get your jars in the canners. In the pressure canner, you are not going to fill them with an inch because you want that steam to do its magic. So you're not going to have the water over your jars there. But you're going to have your jars in there on your trivet. You're going to close up your trivet. And again, with all of this, read your manual for your pressure canner because every one of them are going to be slightly different.
Yeah.
So read your manual and know exactly what they recommend. So have your jars in there. Again, we've kept everything warm. Everything's still hot. Our canner is already somewhat up to the same temperature as a jar. So we're just going to tighten our pressure canner and then we're going to turn it on. And again, for my pressure canner, I have to have it like all the way on high to get it up to build the steam. Once it starts to build the steam and you have a steady stream coming out, you're going to let that go for between 5 and 10 minutes, depending on what pound you're going to process your food at. And each recipe will tell you the poundage that you need to process. And there's different canners with different weights, so just follow those. Again, guidance from your specific canner. You're going to put your, once that steam flows for between 5 and 10 minutes, again, depending on your pressure, you're going to add your weight. Now, once you have your weight on there, you're going to continue to watch because this is where I messed up the first couple of times. I thought as soon as I put my weight on, it's time for me to start my timer. Wrong. You have to let that pressure build. So if you've used an Instapot, you know that whatever you put that on, it takes like 20 minutes for it to build that pressure before it starts
the
to count down.
Yeah.
So that's what you're doing. You're letting that pressure come up with your weight on, and you're going to let it come up to pressure. Again, it can take anywhere between 20 and 30 minutes, just depending on what you have in there. Once it comes up to pressure, then you start your timer. And you can kind of adjust your heat accordingly. But if your pressure drops below, say it's, you want to cook your stock at 12 pounds of pressure. Say you're at 12 pounds of pressure and it drops to 10. Well, you're going to have to restart your timer all over again as soon as you get back up
back
to 12.
To 12. Okay.
You can go higher and you can still keep your timer, but you can't drop below.
Okay.
Because again, we're wanting to do that longevity for that amount of time. And again,
right.
it has to have that pressure in order to get our hermetic seal. So we're killing off those botulism spores. So we want to, once it gets up to pressure, then we start our timer. Once our timer finishes, then we're going to turn off the heat and then just let it sit. Mm-hmm. Some people let theirs sit overnight just to kind of cool in the caner. That way it's not a big deal. You have to let it go all the way down to where there's no more pressure left. Once there's no more pressure, then you can pull your weight off and then let it finish coming, any steam come out. And then again, whenever you go to unscrew your lid, you're going to open it away from you. So mm-hmm. you're not going to give your face a steam bath. You're going to open it away from you. And then you're going to remove your jars again to a spot, let them sit for 24 hours undisturbed. And then the next day you can go check your seals, unscrew your bands, pick it up by the seal and make sure that you're good. If you're mm-hmm. good, then great. Wipe it down. Label and then store it in your pantry. Otherwise, it either needs to be put in the fridge. Mm-hmm. If you need to refreeze it, if you need to reprocess it, again, follow those directions. But so important, once you put your weight on, you still have to let it come up to pressure before you start to process.
Yeah.
And it'll make this really cool little like hula girl sound. Like it kind of dances on there for some of them. So it's, you can kind of hear it versus just watching uh-huh. the pressure the whole time.
Okay.
So, but it'll get do this to know, pretty dance.
Like get to know your canner.
Yes.
And what it looks like, what it sounds like, what mm-hmm. it, yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like you have a relationship with your canner and
yes.
you need to know it well.
Yes. With your oven or anything else.
Yeah.
We okay, know the so hot spot and not.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Are you doing this on your stovetop?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have a gas or?
I have an electric.
Electric? Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's worked okay for you?
It really has. Okay. Again, it's been a learning process. Mm-hmm. And it does. I have a brand new range. I got double oven range for my birthday, so I love it.
Nice.
But
it, is it glass top or is it burners?
It's a glass top.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Oh. So it's a glass top. My caner is actually from like 1970. Don got it for me off eBay. I love it. Everything in it works great. It's a beautiful yellow.
cool.
Again, I really like my retro stuff, so it's fun. But yeah, it's you have to learn your caner. Mm-hmm. And following, again, I really liked, it's a Presto, so I like mm-hmm. to look back at their manual and see what they suggest for mm-hmm. all different kinds of things. You can cook in it as a pressure cooker, but it is a pressure canner. So
yes.
A pressure cooker is not a pressure canner.
Right.
But a pressure canner can do both.
Okay. Got
it. So,
yes. Yeah. You cannot pressure. Did we already say this? You cannot can in your Instant Pot.
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I will say there is on the market and coming more, I think, electric pressure canners. Mm-hmm. Those are in development. I know there was one out on the market actually several years ago, but I think they quit making it or something because I was trying to research that. Mm-hmm. But I know a few companies are working on that right now. So that may be the future of pressure mm-hmm. canning, could possibly be something similar to an Instant Pot, which would be awesome.
Yes.
If they can come up with that. So we'll just keep our eye on that.
Yes.
Okay. Well, that's a really good description of what happens. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
So, not so intimidating.
It's not so scary. It's not mm-hmm. so scary. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I know some people say that they do their canning, water bath or pressure canning outside on a burner. Mm-hmm. I can't speak to that. Have you ever tried that?
I haven't. And because I read some stuff about it too, just because I haven't done it. So I wanted to be able to.
Yeah.
Give some sort of something. But there were several people who were saying, you know, over a wood stove, you just can't control your temperature as mm-hmm. much. It's much harder for that. For any outdoor burners.
Like a propane burner.
Mm-hmm, you've got your outdoor temperature that's involved in your factors as well. Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, being able to do it inside is just really so much easier. Mm-hmm. We've got the modern conveniences of so many things. So, you know, if you're doing it outside because you're scared you're going to blow a hole in your ceiling, pay attention to your machines. You know, it's easy to turn the pressure down, to turn the heat down. It's going to drop relatively quickly. Mm-hmm. Don't freak out and overreact. but be mindful, pay attention. Don't, you know, put this stuff in the pressure canner and then
walk away and do something else.
Yeah. Start vacuuming your floor. And then all of a sudden everything's whistling and then it's blowing and it's just bad. But again, learn your product, learn what you have. And it'll teach you as you're learning. Mm-hmm. So,
okay, good. Okay. We're going to have to wrap this up. I'm just looking at our time. Okay. Troubleshooting. Don't freak out again if you have a failed seal, if your jam is a little runny, if you have liquid loss after you do your processing, discoloration, most of those things, it's still perfectly safe to eat. You just need to do your research, look up and see what is recommended. I know on liquid loss, as long as there's more than 50% of the liquid that was originally in there, it's still safe. Yes. It's still shelf stable.
Yes.
If you lose more than 50% of the liquid, you need to put it, either reprocess it or put it in the refrigerator. And most discoloration is usually harmless. It's usually some sort of enzyme reaction or something. It just doesn't really look very appetizing. So again, check it, do your own research, and then maybe do some troubleshooting for how to avoid that next time if possible. What you do want to look out for are any signs of spoilage. If it's a high, so I'm talking about like after you've had it on the shelf for a little while, if it's a high acid food and you have signs of spoilage like mold or anything like that, just toss it in the garbage. If there's mold on the top, there's mold spores all the way down through the bottom. You might not see them, but they're there. So you don't want to be eating that. So just toss it. If it is a low acid food and you suspect that it's gone bad and there might be botulism in there, there's a whole like detoxifying method you're supposed to do. Like boil the container with the stuff in it. And then, you know, you got to wash everything that it touched. And there's a whole thing you're supposed to do. So, and I think that's mainly to prevent it being poisoning animals or children or something before you throw it away. Again, go do your research on that.
Yes.
But if you practice safe canning practices and you follow the rules and you do everything correctly, you generally shouldn't have that problem. So briefly, I did do a little bit of research on startup costs. So if you have nothing, okay, you have no supplies and you want to get started canning today, it will cost you, now this is if you buy new, okay, a water bath canner with a rack range, they start on Amazon at about $45. But like you said, you could just use a large stock pot, like a 20-quart stock pot or something like that, which you can find those all day and all night at Goodwill. I mean, like they always have those big stock pots. And actually, I almost always see a canner at Goodwill, like a water bath canner.
Yeah,
I usually see several. You can get a brand new 20-quart stainless steel stock pot on Amazon for $32. But definitely check your thrift stores for both of those things. Just make sure it has a tight fitting lid.
Yes.
What does a pressure cooker run?
So Dawn was able to find mine off eBay. I think, you can get a used one that's, again, you want to make sure that it's still in good condition. If you use one that's a gasket, you want to make sure it's got a good gasket or get a replacement. But it can start anywhere between like $55. But brand new, you're going to look at around $150 to $500, depending on what brand you're getting. Again, what type with the different weights and things like that.
So I know the like Cadillac of, pressure canners, the All American, those are like big bucks, like $400 or $500.
Yeah, they're going to be a $500 startup. So, but again, I mean, this is something that you're going to have forever. Those also, there's not gaskets, so there's not the added cost of having to replace gaskets down the road.
Oh, so that's the difference.
So there's a difference there. You're paying more up front, but you don't have
to
the back end.
Okay. I didn't know that. Okay. Well, that's it. That's interesting. That's good to know. Okay. Jars. Generally, you guys, jars, brand new, if you source them correctly, which one of my favorite places is Walmart, and then actually your local Ace Hardware store almost always has jars in stock. I don't know about other hardware, but I know our Ace always has them. And they're about $1 a jar. That's about what you're going to pay. So right now, I did this last night, walmart.com, 12 count of pint-sized jars were $12. The wide mouth were a little bit more. They were 14. And then the good thing about that, when you buy brand new jars, and you can buy them at Goodwill, but they've gotten smart at Goodwill and they charge you a buck or more mm-hmm. for a mason jar, and it doesn't have a lid.
Yeah.
So when you buy them new at a case of 12, they're going to already have those lid assemblies on there.
Yep.
So then you don't have to buy the lids. The lids aren't that expensive. 12 wide mouth lids are $4. And if you just get the bands, like the bands are less. I can't remember mm-hmm. what the cost was on that one. So not a huge investment.
Yeah.
And the bands will last a really long time and you can use those over and over again. Yes, you just
because
have to,
you're not storing
right.
with the bands on.
Exactly. Yes.
And Amazon does have a really great, I think a sleeve of like 120 wide mouth is like $20.
For the lid?
For just the lid part.
With the rubber with the rubber part on the bottom. That
And I think $220 for regular mouth for like $20. So again, that's what, because they're one time use. So if you can buy in bulk, that's you know, cutting down on your cost.
And I think I think Azure Standard, I don't know if you use Azure Standard, but they I think they sell canning supplies and lids like that in bulk. You can buy like whole big sleeves of them. Mm-hmm. Like I said before, that stainless steel funnel, it's $6, you guys. Mm-hmm. $6. And the jar lifter is $8. So it really, you can totally do it. Mm-hmm. It's not that expensive. And take good care of your jars and they will serve you well. And you can use them over and over again. As long as they're not chipped or cracked, you can keep canning in them until, you know, forever, really. Mm-hmm. I would say where to splurge. Like you said, that All-American Cadillac canner, I didn't know that that $450 or $500 means no rubber gasket replacement. So that might be something you want to think about. And I would say your biggest splurge needs to be on your ingredients.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What you're putting in the jar, spend whatever you can to put the highest quality. And that doesn't necessarily mean spending a lot of money. It's like we said before, buy things when they're in season and they're plentiful. Yes. And they're cheaper and they have the maximum nutritional value. So, any like other ideas about where you get your supplies from or anything like that?
So I do love a good estate sale.
Oh, that's, yes.
And estate sales are always really good for, anything from the jars to the canners.
And they're almost always in the garage.
Mm-hmm, always in the garage. Again, just watch because, you know, a lot of people do collect the recycled pickle jars, which are great again for, you know, your pantry for just
whatever, but not for canning.
Canned items. But yes, so estate sales are some of my favorites for those sorts of things. Yeah, Walmart's great. HEB is great. If you can find a coupon for stuff, that's always a plus as well. But yeah. And remember when you're buying the jars, when you're buying the canner, this is a one-time investment. It's not like it's something that you're doing again and again and again.
Yes.
Obviously you're going to have to get jars when they do crack and things like that, but you're going to get so much use out of it. That $14, I have a hard time, you know, sometimes being like, oh, do I really need that? Spend the money.
Yeah.
I mean, get the good jars, get the size that you want, get the size for the batch that you need as well. Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, if you think about the cost of, say you're going to spend $14 on some wide mouth pint jars, you're going to get 12 of them. Okay. And you're going to make your spaghetti sauce that you're going to learn how to do. Mm-hmm. Well, what are you going to pay? And so essentially it's just a little over $1 a jar for that. And what are you going to pay for a jar of spaghetti sauce at the store? Mm-hmm. Probably $1.
Yeah.
At least.
Yeah.
For good sauce that doesn't have weird stuff in it, you're going to pay way more than $1.
Yes. Yes.
And that's only, you only use that once. I mean, you know, so like you said, just consider all of those things when you're thinking about the cost and that it is an investment. So, and I wish we had time to talk about like storing your jars and, you know, what to do with all that when you're not using them, but we're way out of time. So we're going to have to wrap it up here. But this has been so good.
Yes. So fun.
Really fun. And I do feel a little bit like empowered to maybe try the pressure canning. I think I'm going to have you over.
Yes.
And you can show me.
Yes.
So I'm like, we can be scared together.
Okay. I like walking into the awkward. It's fun.
You'll be great. Okay. All right. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, come be awkward. Blow up my kitchen with me.
Allison, what happened here? Oh, had me be over. I really thought she knew what she was doing. Clearly she didn't.
Thank you so much for listening to part two of this deep dive into food preservation and canning in the home. I hope these last 2 weeks have inspired you to practice good stewardship through intentionally storing, using, and preserving the food that you've been blessed with in your home. If you've never tried canning because you were afraid of blowing up your house or poisoning your family, I pray that the info and the stories that we shared here have given you just that little boost of confidence to move forward in learning about and practicing canning. Remember, if you follow safe best practices, keep everything squeaky clean, and use verified recipes from trusted sources, you can confidently preserve food that will nourish your family, reduce waste, and make the most of your grocery budget. Check the episode description box for links to the resources that we mentioned on today's show. Sign up for that email list so you will get the invitation and info this Friday on applying to be a guest on the show. That will also put you on our list to receive our weekly newsletter, Homemaker Happy Mail, which has been on summer break, but will be returning with season 15 in a couple of weeks. If you have found value in today's episode, would you give the show some love in one of the following ways? Share with someone that you know. If you have a homemaker in your life who you think would benefit from this information and would be inspired and encouraged, just go right now to the little share button on your phone or whatever device you're listening on and send that over to her so she can take a listen. You can also leave us a rating and a review on your podcast listening app of choice. And if you are so moved, you can leave us a tip in our virtual tip jar, Buy Me a Coffee. All tips go to help offset the cost of this podcast production. So I thank you very much. Just go to buymeacoffee.com/theartofhome. You can get more information on all the ways that you can support the show over on our support page, theartofhomepodcast.com/support. Well, that is all for this episode and for this season of the Art of Home podcast. I will be on a 2-week break, but I will be back with all new episodes on August 16th, hopefully including some new episodes with you, our listeners, featured as guests. Until then, keep practicing your art of making a home.